Hi, everyone. We are so excited to share with all of you right now that we have opened our waitlist for the symposium with the Tarot Diagnosis. It's an online village library lounge that will allow us all to expand the conversations that we have on the podcast by including all of you who listen and engage with us on Instagram.
We decided to create the symposium so that we could engage with all of you on a deeper, more meaningful level. We wanted a space that allows not only us to connect more to everyone else, but so that the members of our community could meet and connect with each other.
We're currently working on building this magical, intellectual, and emotionally beautiful symposium space where we can invite all of you into your own cozy tarot and mental health community so that you can hang out with us, pull cards, learn and grow, and both give and receive support.
So if you want to be a part of the symposium and join our cozy little village, head over to our website, www.thetarotdiagnosis.com, and click the symposium link to sign up to be on the waitlist. While you're there, you can also sign up for our newsletter so that you get first access to episode releases, exciting updates, and exclusive tarot spreads.
You're listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. We're your hosts. I'm Luna.
And I'm Shannon. We're both clinical psychotherapists who trained together at Johns Hopkins.
Now we are both in private practice in Tampa, Florida, and in Baltimore, Maryland.
We also both happen to have a love for tarot.
Each episode, we work to demystify the tarot and explore its connections to mental and emotional health.
While this podcast may feel therapeutic, it is not meant to take the place of psychotherapy.
Join us while we pull cards to better understand ourselves and those around us. Hi, Shannon.
Hey, Luna.
So today's topic is, I think, really interesting because I think some people are going to be surprised by it. We're going to be talking about the idea of empathy, which is a word that people use a lot right now. And I think that what we decided over text message last night was that this is a word that can sort of has maybe turned into too much of a good thing, that it's a word that's used so much and has become such a pressure in our culture that actually it's developed a little bit of a shadow side.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think, you know, when we were deciding what we wanted to talk about today, we felt nervous talking about the shadow side of empathy. And then we were both like, okay, we haven't been nervous talking about an episode in a while. So maybe that means this is what we need to talk about. Like we have to step outside of our comfort zone type of thing. I'm nervous to see where the episode goes, but also excited because I do think this is a really important topic. I feel like the word empathy and the word empath specifically get thrown around a ton. And I feel like it's also going to be important to talk about what the difference between empathy and sympathy is, because I feel like a lot of people get that confused. So I want to make sure we touch on that. And yeah, I'm just like, I'm really excited to see where it goes. Yeah. I think we totally walked into this going, hey, we're just going to talk about like empathy and the fact that it has a shadow side and let's just see what happens.
I echo everything you just said. I think that it's true. Like when there's something that makes us a little nervous, like that's a good topic. And
unreal.
We're doing really good, like modeling behavior by going to the place that scares us a little bit. And yeah, I'm eager to get into some of the definitions. Should we begin with pulling a card?
Always.
Always.
All right, what deck are you pulling?
Oh, ah, no, jinx! I'm doing something different today. I gifted myself a new deck for Christmas because nobody gave me a tarot deck for Christmas, which actually I think, like, kudos to them for not going for the obvious.
Right.
So I got the Aquarian Tarot.
And yes, I saw that. I'm so excited that you got it. I've been looking at it for months.
It's so cool. It makes me feel groovy, you know?
Ooh,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. How about you? What are you using?
I'm being, you know, my boring self and pulling from Tarot Vintage.
Right on. And what are we asking here?
I was thinking probably just guidance. What are you thinking?
Guidance seems good. What guidance do we need for this conversation?
Yeah, basically, because I think, you know, it could go a million different directions. So maybe just some guidance and wisdom.
We'll see. All
and
right.
Some comfort.
Ooh, I had a card jump out. So
it's
always
love
a good start. Yeah.
What jumped out?
Four of Cups.
Oh,
actually.
I didn't think about that for this episode.
Yeah, that's interesting. How about you? What did you get?
Page of Pentacles.
Oh.
Which I kind of really like.
Yeah, I like that. I like that
a
lot.
So what are you thinking about with Four of Cups?
Well, I'm still processing it, honestly. One of the things about Four of Cups that I think is interesting is that it's a card that appears really different in lots of different decks. You know, some cards always sort of like look vaguely the same, or usually, you know, like there's a common theme. But I'm always curious about Four of Cups because it can become clear that different deck creators sort of have different ideas about it. In this particular one, we have a profile of somebody sitting next to a tree. There's three cups next to the person, and the person is kind of staring off, ignoring them. And in this one, it's the version where there is a hand coming down, probably from a cloud, holding another cup, and the cup is sideways, which is interesting to me. There's probably not much in that cup if it's sideways. At the same time, it's a cup being offered, and the person is still just kind of ignoring it. To me, it's guidance. The guidance that I'm getting is still kind of fuzzy on it, but I think it's sort of something about the concept of holding one's own space, which I think is really about boundaries.
Mm. So that makes sense. I feel like, yeah, because when you pulled Four of Cups, I was like, what are we going to say about that? I had to sit with it too for a second. And I'm kind of going back to, I don't know, maybe this is just me kind of trying to pull for something to tie it back into what we're talking about. But I feel like maybe Four of Cups could be a good way to talk about the difference between empathy and sympathy. You know, you've got someone sitting there with their arms crossed, you know, and someone, you know, seemingly offering them something. Is that sympathy or is that empathy? What is being offered to this person that maybe they're not accepting? I feel like there's a lot that we could, kind of dive into with
right.
that.
Or maybe the offering isn't what the person wants.
Right. Or needs.
Or needs. And is that the person being sulky? Mm-hmm. Or is that because the offering is not coming from the right place?
Coming from the right place. Right. Oh, you're about to just like dive into the shadow side of empathy right now.
Well, and clearly I took some liberties with it because I also think that the sort of like hand in the cloud is usually like representing like coming from a good place. So I will admit I took a liberty there.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm kind of like, you know, taking liberties too, like, oh, let's tie it back in. But right. I mean, that's why we love doing this because it really makes us think and challenges the way we're viewing cards. Mm-hmm. And I think actually before we go too far, it reminds me of, so before we, you know, hopped into this episode, I was like, you know, let me just do a quick search on what empathy even like, how did that term even originate?
Ooh.
Where did it come from? And it actually has a really beautiful origination. It comes from this German concept of feeling yourself into a work of art. And I feel like now that I'm envisioning this Four of Cups in my head, you know, that does make sense if it's empathy because, you know, you're feeling yourself into this person's experience and then offering something, which, you know, could also be a little bit of sympathy. But, and I think that kind of ties into us going to have to having to explain the difference between sympathy and empathy. But I also just like really love like the meaning of where that word came from, like feeling yourself into a work of art. It is super beautiful.
Yeah. You know, and I think the direction you're going is super interesting. We might argue Four of Cups is empathy and Page of Pentacles is sympathy.
Oh, interesting. I feel like I might interpret it differently. And I feel like I'll interpret it differently because if we use empathy, like the meaning of like that German concept of feeling yourself into a work of art, you know, this hand kind of coming down, I feel like we could say is feeling yourself into this person's experience. I guess that is empathy. Yeah. But then like this person's holding a cup, which would almost be like, I'm offering you condolences, right? Which is very sympathy. This is why I'm like, we should probably explain the difference between sympathy and empathy. Because clearly, even as I'm talking about it, I'm like, oh, wait, no, you're right. Yeah, that is empathy. This is interesting.
It is.
But Page of Pentacles, I guess the way I'm looking at Page of Pentacles is this more sense of curiosity every time I pull pages, I think like curious. But I like this particular card because they're, you know, the page is holding the pentacle and like observing it and looking at it and really just like kind of like studying what's happening, which makes me think of empathy because you're trying, when you're empathetic and when you're expressing empathy, you're trying to figure out what is happening with that person. You're being curious and observational, and, you know, also trying to reflect back, you know, and figure out what it is that they might be feeling. Whereas sympathy is more of this, you know, I'm so sorry, please let me know what I can do for you type of thing. And I think that's why I'm leaning more towards sympathy for Four of Cups, just imagery based, because it's like, here are some flowers, I'm so sorry for your pain. And the person is like sitting there with their arms crossed, like, no, I don't want sympathy. Whereas empathy with the Page of Pentacles could be like, oh my God, that's so tough. Like, I imagine that must be incredibly painful for you. And then that person who's sitting there with their arms crossed isn't being offered, you know, flowers or whatever. They're being offered attention and that person's energy. So the response will be different. If in sympathy, you're handing someone these flowers or this cup and saying, you know, here are my deepest condolences. And the person's like, no, I don't want that. I don't need that. If you're offering empathy, the person might say, yeah, you're right. This is really painful for me. Okay. So like the response is also different. With empathy, you're not, the person's not sitting there with their arms crossed.
See, I think that it's become very clear that we've got in many ways a language problem, because I think that these two words are so closely linked, and actually people do use them interchangeably. And I think of the definitions, actually, as I was looking up the actual literal definitions, even in looking up definitions, I found conflicting information.
Oh, totally.
So, I mean, I think that that is part of the problem. And I think that the root of what we're trying to say is that, at least to me, when people talk about empathy, there is sort of this like idea that sympathy is like a little bit more surface level and empathy is a little bit more like, I can feel that same feeling. But you see, I think that there's a place where you can have sympathy and still be curious about the other person and sort of try to develop a conceptualization of the person's experience without feeling the feels. Like, and again, I feel like there are so many different definitions that it's not like my definition here is the correct one, but that's the way I always think of it, is that sympathy is more intellectual, or a sort of a looking at it and saying like, wow, that must be really hard. I can understand how that's hard, versus empathy is more of a sensation of like, wow, been there, know what that feels like, totally right there with you. And I think that culturally, we've put a lot of emphasis on the idea of empathy, trying to like be in the other person's shoes. And I don't know if that's always wise.
Yeah. And you know, you talking about a language issue is important, because what you just described too is the difference between cognitive empathy and emotional empathy. Yes. There's actually three different types of empathy. Mm-hmm. But so what you're describing is, you know, that cognitive empathy, being able to imagine without stepping in, is where, you know, I would argue is like that healthy level of empathy, being able to say, oh yeah, like that's tough, or I can imagine being in that position, or I have been in that position, but not absorbing what that person is feeling. Whereas emotional empathy is fully kind of stepping into that person's experience with them and, you know, being able to experience the emotions, being able to have that like a visceral reaction with them. And if you stay too much in that emotional empathy space, that's why a lot of people call themselves empaths. Mm-hmm. It can be physically and emotionally damaging, which is another side of this kind of like shadow side of empathy. But yeah, there is this like the language issue is very frustrating. And I know I get tripped up all the time, you know, and a lot of people I talk to get tripped up on it too.
Yeah. I mean, like, because I think that you just said like four things that are really interesting. I do think that now sympathy is being dismissed, and I don't think it should be. I think that, you know, the example I came up with is like, if I'm talking to somebody whose mother died, I can sympathize. I don't think it's fair for me to say that I can truly empathize with it. I can, because like my mother's living, I don't actually know what that experience is like, but I do have experiences of grief. I have lost people, but I think there's something unique with that particular one. So I would label that as sympathy. Now we're getting into like a semantics thing here,
right?
But I do think like, and another way of talking about that would be cognitive empathy, where cognitive empathy versus emotional empathy. But I think that the important piece is the first part that you said, that there, I think that there is kind of a romanticizing of being empathetic or being an empath, that I think is very shadowy. And I think that there's a certain pressure that we're supposed to, like, we're deeper people or are sort of more profound, like kind of Knight of Cups, you know, like, oh, like this is so, I'm so intense, or like, I'm so emotional. And isn't this beautiful? And like, again, I'm not so sure that it is, because then you are caught in a tempest all the time.
Yeah. You know, you're so right. I did a Luna today, and I laid out a bunch of cards. Like, I pulled like 9 or 10 cards, and I'm like, okay, here's what's going to like guide my view on this topic. And I'm like looking down going, which of these cards did I pull that kind of represent what you're talking about? And I keep looking at the Hermit, and I feel like that is very in alignment with what you're talking about right now, because there needs to be this balance between this like healthy and toxic empathy. And I feel like the Hermit is this like beautiful representation of being able to like hold that light to someone else's experiences and suffering, but then also being able to, and being able to say like, I see you, hey, I have this light up, I'm shining it on you, I see you right now. But then also knowing, you know, because the Hermit is all about like this inner wisdom, knowing when to kind of pivot or drop the light and shine it somewhere else. And knowing the appropriate amount of time to hold that light up and then bring it down.
I love how you just talked about that. That was really beautiful. Can I go back to a second for Page of Pentacles?
Yeah.
Because I'm not done with this card. I was picking it up to put it back into like one of my little piles that I have. And I was like, nope, not yet. I want to hold on to this. Because I think that the idea of curiosity that you brought up with this is what's so important. And I think that we are culturally confused about what it means to understand other people. And I think that there is a like low grade pressure that we're supposed to really be able to have the sensation of a shared experience, or really be able to put ourselves in the other's position in order to be fully developed, well-rounded people who are capable of compassion. And I guess I really want to push back on that message, because I think that that has been very unhealthy for us. My daughter, I was talking with my daughter last night as we were driving home, and I was talking about what we might record about today. And she started talking about being in English class and how like every book she reads is sort of there's this pressure around having empathy for the people. And like the books are clearly chosen for developing more empathy or more of an understanding for more people, which is not bad, but perhaps also like doesn't give us enough room for that Hermit place. So I guess I return to the Hermit instead of the Page of Pentacles.
You know, everything that you're saying is so important. And I think basically I'm going to bring 10 of Wands in, because I think what you're saying is, yes, empathy can be taught. It should be taught. It is incredibly important in our world. It really, really is. Mm-hmm. How do we teach empathy and embrace empathy without becoming the Ten of Wands?
Thank you. Yes. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah. Yes. Yes. How do we learn? And I mean, I keep thinking about you and your garden metaphor, like where do we find our boundaries of I'm allowed to have my own unique human experience, and nobody can possibly understand my own unique human experience, not fully. And that's okay, because that's what everybody, like we're all doing that. Mm-hmm. And how can I love the artwork idea. Like, how can I go up to somebody else's life and look at it and kind of like step into it and step out of it and like understand it and observe it the way I might observe a painting, but without sort of feeling a pressure that I have to live within the painting.
That's a beautiful, I love this conversation. And it's making me think of Knight of Pentacles right now. That was one of the cards I pulled out, because I feel like it's the Knight of Pentacles is very much like, okay, how do I keep myself safe and not walking into this garden all of the time? But also, how do I keep this other person's garden safe? Like, how do I respect the garden? How do I tend to it in a way that's okay and safe for me to tend to it, but also welcoming and needed by the other person? And what's just the appropriate way to experience this person's garden? And then once I'm done, then what? How do I make sure that I'm not carrying, you know, whatever I experienced in that garden with me into my own garden?
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, let's not have a blurring of lines. The card that came forward to me is actually Three of Pentacles.
Yeah.
I like the very traditional image of Three of Pentacles with the idea of there's this three people and they all clearly have their own jobs, but they all clearly are looking at each other and are talking as everyone's doing their own job. I like the differentiation there of this is what I do. I'm really good at this. And I appreciate that you respect that I'm really good at this. I really respect that you're good at that other thing. So you do that. And I will watch and observe and be appreciative of it, but also sort of not try to like step into, like stay in my own lane. You know, I think that that's the question that we're bringing up with this dark side of empathy is, are we pushing it so much that we're asking people to swerve all over the road rather than encouraging people to stay in their own lane? Because the idea is if we're encouraging people to stay in their own lane, well, now you're a horrible person because you don't care about others.
Oh, you know what this sounds like is it's almost like what you're saying is what you're experiencing is this pressure to encourage everyone to be an empath. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think so, because an empath, it seems like is someone who is really just solely existing within that emotional empathy space. And then if you aren't really putting all of that effort into feeling everything that that everyone is feeling around you, then, you know, you might be considered an asshole when really you're just protecting yourself and implementing healthy boundaries. And I feel like maybe we should head into talking about the concept of an empath, because I do think it's really popular in, you know, in our community and just like in general, because a lot of people kind of own that title of empath. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it can be really unhealthy to own that, especially if you're not really sure where the concept of being an empath or what it means to be empathic or feel empathy, like what it really is.
No, I think that's exactly where I was kind of going. And I think that there's more to this conversation than this, but I think that what you just said needs to be said, and how much of you owning it is performative, how much of you owning it is finding a word to describe yourself because you don't think you're enough. And how much of it is not having good skills. And also, like, I'll turn the light on it. And how much of it is also like really beautiful to be able to have kind of this additional perception of being able to tune into people. I mean, I think that
totally.
And like that can be beautiful, but I think that it needs to, you know, with any gift comes responsibilities.
I love that you made sure to acknowledge it as this beautiful experience because it is. And I think, like, you and I know what that's like. Mm-hmm. And it makes me want to talk about Two of Wands and Eight of Cups. I'm not sure if I want to talk about them together or separately right now, but, you know, as we're kind of diving into this empath lane, you know, a lot of the reason that so many of us would consider like ourselves an empath is because that we have developed this skill out of like a need for survival. And a lot of people might be really upset to hear me say that. And that's not my intention. But there's a lot of research and a lot of studies that show that there is a strong correlation between childhood trauma and adverse experiences and this increase in sensitivity to the feelings and experiences of others. So I think that's why for me, especially in my practice when I'm working with people and they're highly in tune to what's happening around them, it's like, okay, yeah, like let's acknowledge that you developed this ability that is incredibly powerful and very cool and very useful, but also can be incredibly detrimental to your well-being.
I think what you just said is really important and good to be said. And also, like, I don't think it's disparaging in any way. I mean, like, everyone is born with a certain level of, like, I'm going to go to Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences, which is this idea that like everybody is born with multiple forms of intelligence. And some people are naturally more gifted in some intelligences than in others.
Without but a doubt, for sure.
Absolutely. You know, like some people are more musical, some people are better with words, some people are good at directions. But all of these gifts, Howard Gardner's theory has always said that the intelligences are inborn, but mm-hmm. also can be developed. So even if you're not born with a strong musical gift, it can improve with practice. And I think that we could just kind of put what you just said within that realm of you might be born with a certain level of sensitivity or a certain emotional intelligence. And like part of that is inborn, but perhaps it was enhanced or grew.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like through having childhood trauma. And at that point, I mean, like now we're off to the rodeo in terms of like, can I be grateful to this gift, which was trained into me through adversity? That's a very complicated question mm-hmm. to ask. That feels like Eight of Cups to me.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's sort of like this, what do I take and what do I leave behind?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm thinking about highly sensitive people too, for example, like there is this genetic predisposition to how empathic you are, how sensitive you are to the feelings and the energies around you. And what you're saying is exactly right. Then once, you know, we have this genetic predisposition, and then it's the nature versus nurture argument, right? Like mm-hmm, what mm-hmm. is reinforced? So, you know, let's say you were already predisposed to being, you know, sensitive to the feelings and the energies around you, add on if you grew up in like a home that was relatively unpredictable or maybe emotionally unstable, you most likely learned very early on that you had to be highly in tune with the various cues of the people around you, like behavioral cues, verbal cues, feeling the ability to feel tension in order mm-hmm. for you to predict what might happen at any given moment. So you were essentially like forced to enhance this already heightened ability that you had in order to respond or react, you know, accordingly, which, know, essentially is a survival technique, which, you know, stays with us throughout adulthood. And then it becomes up to us, which that's why I wanted to bring in Two of Wands, to decide, okay, what are we going to focus on? Am I going to focus on this like really heightened sense that I have and constantly be absorbing people's energies? Or am I going to hold that ability in my hand and say, this is something that I have that is part of me, but I have to make sure that I'm not overutilizing it. I'm not only staring at this thing that I'm holding in my hand, that I'm also looking out into the vista and seeing everything else that's going on and paying attention to other things.
I love the way you just talked about that.
Oh, you
know, I love the way you just talked about it. Like the cards that jumped forward to me as you were talking is actually like Wheel of Fortune, which I pulled right before this while we were sort of like getting the audio hopefully set up mm-hmm. correctly. I shuffled and pulled Wheel of Fortune and the Magician. And I think that that's sort of like reflective of the conversation we're having. There is Wheel of Fortune. There is chance. There is just luck. There is circumstances of our birth and circumstances of our training and also like what our natural gifts are like. And it changes and we can turn the wheel and we can make a difference. And we do that through the Magician. I always like to point out that the Magician tends to have everything in front of him. You know, he has the cup, the wand, the pentacle. I feel like I'm missing one. What did I not say? The sword. He has all of the tools. And the trick about being the Magician is understanding which tools to use at any given moment. It's not about the gift of magic. It's about having the wisdom to know which tool to use.
Can I turn this in a darker direction?
Yes, please.
you talking about the Magician, I was like, ooh, I'm looking at my reverse King of Swords. That's in my like lineup of cards that I pulled. And I was like, ooh, but you talking about the Magician and power, the reverse King of Swords is all about misuse of power and manipulation. And
yes,
you know, this kind of this like sneakiness in a way, but like not calculated. That's the word I'm looking for, you know, because it's a king. And I think that's the other dark side of empathy is when you're not paying attention to the motivations behind your empathy, it can become manipulative.
Yes. Yes. Very easily. I mean, I think that that's, I mean, this is the work that we do sometimes in our practices, I think you do it more in your practice than I do in mine, of working with people who might be either naturally gifted with sensitivities and or grew up in a household that was chaotic. Mm-hmm. And the coping mechanism, the tool that they have picked up, has been learning how to tune into certain things around them. And then without even realizing it, twisting it and manipulating it to make things feel less chaotic for themselves, but frankly, much more chaotic for everyone around them.
Right. Right. And that's why self-awareness is so important, because a lot of times, you know, this aspect of manipulation isn't always done out of intentional means to misuse this skill.
Right.
And I think a lot of people who have this ability don't even realize how powerful it can be.
Right.
And I think that's where self-awareness comes in, and being able to stop and say, hold on, what are my motivations behind this? Why am I being empathetic? How does this benefit me? How does this benefit the other person? What is the end goal here? What am I hoping to achieve in this experience? You know, because I think of like salesmen. Sorry if someone's listening and you're a salesman.
Yeah,
This is how the use of empathy can be manipulative. Like, people will do whatever they can to empathize, to make a sale, for example. And so, not that it's bad, I understand. Like, you know, I was raised by salesmen. So, like, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But, you know, being able to understand like what you're capable of, and making sure that you're using this skill to be a genuinely good person and not do it out of like malicious intent.
Yeah, I love the way you're talking about manipulation. It's a word that I claim and that like I will use in my practice a lot and describe myself as being a manipulator, because I am. I mean, like, it's intentional. People come to me and literally pay me money to manipulate them. And I point it out to them so they understand that manipulation is a skill. And the problem is, if you're using the skill really exclusively for your own advantage, and you're taking advantage of somebody else, and it is a major problem if it's a skill that goes unchecked and you are unaware of the fact that you've developed this skill and that you're using it haphazardly. It's a skill that I have that I use deliberately. I try to use it only deliberately. Like, might I occasionally slip in life? Yeah, it's possible. I try not to, but it's a skill that I have. I mean, again, it goes back to the magician idea. Like, this is the tool that I'm going to use in a given moment, but it's powerful if you're good at it. And there are a lot of people who are good at it without realizing how good they are.
Yeah. And, you know, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking like, and how many people are not willing to acknowledge that they have the ability because they're worried about the ramifications of even just acknowledging it, because it has such a negative connotation to it.
Right. Right.
But I mean, that's the power of self-awareness. And that's how freeing it is, and how it's like, okay, yeah, there's this thing that exists. I'm really good at it. But I also have to keep it in check.
Yes.
Okay. I feel like that's also kind of Knight of Pentacles. Like, how do I keep myself and other people safe?
Oh, I like that. I love how you're talking about particularly the court cards for Pentacles today. I feel like they get a bad rap.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I pulled. I pulled so many, so I'm forcing myself to think of them this way.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that that's right. That's sort of the question of like living in this world and being responsible for living in this world, rather than living in our emotions.
I mean, that goes back to what I was saying earlier. I mean, that was kind of like, I guess the way I described that Two of Wands too, like, yeah, this level of responsibility. And it's actually kind of cool. So I'm actually putting the Two of Wands next to the Knight of Pentacles. And I realized, like, so in the Two of Wands, I love that it looks like this person's like literally holding the earth. And we talk about pentacles as like this very earthly energy. Whereas, you know, wands itself is very like that fire energy. And, you know, there is this kind of like juxtaposition between that fire energy of wands. How far can I take this, my ability to be very empathetic, versus how do I keep it in check and keep myself grounded and keep this skill that I have highly tuned in check and grounded. And I think that's the Knight of Pentacles.
Sorry to interrupt. Yes,
no, go ahead.
I think that that's exactly like the place of where we began. Well, we were sort of like arguing with this, like wrestling with these words of sympathy versus empathy, and why I sort of tend to want to lean more into the place of sympathy, mm-hmm. because to me, sympathy is much more this place of like, let me look at this, let me view the landscape, and let me make decisions based on what's good for everybody around me, versus kind of swimming in the soup of it.
Yeah. And what's interesting, so, and I try not to stay too much in sympathy just because of my own experiences and the way I view sympathy. And I try very hard to stay in cognitive empathy. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. like, and that's also what we're taught in school. Like, you know, how can you express what this person is feeling, like reflect to them, like that you know what they've just told you, that you're really there and listening in order to give them the space to open up doors for more conversation. Where I feel like, just for me personally, sympathy can be a block sometimes. Like, I'm going back to that Four of Cups. I think that's why I related sympathy so much to that Four of Cups, because I feel like if I'm overly sympathetic to someone, they will sit there with their arms crossed and there won't be any movement.
Right.
Versus, you know, if I throw out a sympathy, but then allow myself to step into cognitive empathy, maybe mm-hmm. a little mm-hmm. bit of emotional empathy too, there is that kind of dropping of the arms and an opening up that can happen.
Yeah, and I think we're right back to linguistically. Like, I think that the words you're using are more appropriate than the words I'm using, honestly. It's now that I'm listening to you more, I think that that's right. I think cognitive empathy is where I work. You know, like,
yeah,
that's
totally.
What I, right? Like, that's where I live. And, you know, in my own life, sort of do a whole bunch of them. I've read something, and I'm trying to remember the source. I think that this came from Brené Brown. I could be wrong. But there was a description of sort of the idea is if somebody is sitting at the bottom of a pit, that sympathy is looking down with a flashlight and being like, oh, well, I mean, at least it's not raining. Sorry about that. She did, like, that was the description of sympathy. And the description of empathy was climb down into the pit and be there with the person. Whereas I think you and I are talking about, like, could we find something in the middle here of, I don't necessarily think it's a good idea to climb down into the pit, but
right.
being able to say, wow, that must be so scary. Are you cold? Or, like, that's like question asking is a big important one.
What do you need?
Yeah, like, that person might be cold, or that person might be like scared of bugs. Like, if I mm-hmm. ask, then they can start talking about it. That's not necessarily me understanding what's going on, but it's me being curious. Again, there's that curiosity
right.
about what's going on.
I love that example you gave. It reminds me of an example I read once, and I don't remember where it came from. I'm sorry. Both of us are like, we don't know where this came from. It doesn't belong to us. It's not our own. We can't take credit. But it's this beautiful like description of a non-swimmer jumping in to save someone who's drowning.
Perfect.
And that being that like over-empathizer, the person who is being too much of an empath. You know, also we could throw in the concept of codependence. You know, that's someone
yes,
setting
yes.
themselves on fire to keep someone else warm. You know, using your pit example, actually, like you jumping into the pit and saying, oh, you're cold. Hold on. Let me set my clothes on fire real quick so I can keep you warm. You know, this goes back to the ability to acknowledge that we want to be there for people and we want to connect and we want to keep people safe, but we also have a responsibility to keep ourselves safe. And then another component of that is we take away someone's autonomy when we over-empathize or when we over-sympathize. You know, we could set ourselves on fire. We could spend all this time and this effort building someone a ladder, allowing them to climb out of the pit, but then now they're expecting us to continue setting ourselves on fire and continuing to build them ladders every time they fall in the pit, instead of saying, hey, how can I help you build a ladder? Can I gather some sticks for you? You know, but not doing everything for them.
Right. I think that that's exactly the message that we're trying to get to. And I keep landing on swords, and I'm keep looking at all the swords being like, which sword card is this that I want to talk about? And I think it might be one of the court cards. I think it might be either the King of Swords or the Queen of Swords, which is not the way we would necessarily normally talk about these cards. But I think that there is a question of discernment and of thinking, of being able to say, just because I feel an emotion about this person's pain, how can I be discerning and be the most helpful for everybody, for myself and for this other person?
I feel like that's very Queen of Swords. I love Queen of Swords. Like I try to embody that energy. It's like, that's what I've worked really hard to become, is Queen of Swords, because there is this, like, you know, clear boundary setting that she embodies, and very direct communication, where I think with empathy and sympathy, you have to be careful because you could get lost in absorption. You could become so overly absorbed that you now can't see beyond what's happening. And now neither of you are able to make a decision or move forward. Now you're both stuck.
Right. Right. And I mean, that goes back to that Ten of Wands that you were talking about earlier, of like, now by not having clear boundaries and by not being clean, but by being like throwing myself in or not training myself well around finding my own emotional landscape and living in that, now we've got a hot mess.
Well, you know, this is actually making me think of Eight of Cups slightly differently. So originally because you had brought up Eight of Cups first, I had it laid out. I wanted to talk about it. And it was very much the way I was viewing it was, you know, how empaths specifically become incredibly proficient in, you know, that journey of like seeking. but now I'm thinking of, you know, this Eight of Cups in addition to the Queen of Swords, where it's like, hey, you know, I came over here and observed your cups that you had stacked and talked to you about the process and what that was like for you. Now it's time for me to go and, you know, find my own cups.
You know, that's interesting. I pulled the Hangman real quick.
I have that out too. Yeah. This is the first time we've pulled the same card at the same time. I like it just pulled it a few minutes ago and I was sitting off to the side. I was like, I don't know how I want to talk about it yet, but I will.
Well, because I think that that's the importance of not necessarily having the same lived or shared experience as somebody else.
Yeah.
The ability of being able to hang upside down and say like, well, this could be a different set of cups, or this could be a different way of being, or this could be a different tool. I think that that is critical in our world, because we come into this world alone, we die alone. Like, we are all on our own individual fool's journey. We are all on our own path. And when there's this duality of being a human, that we are also tribal animals. We are designed to live in a community. We are designed to have relationships. So that duality of being able to do both, of having an independent journey while also having a sympathetic journey along with somebody else. I mean, like, the word sympathetic there was an interesting thing that just came out of my mouth, because that word for a moment wasn't about feeling sorry for the other person or feeling compassion for another person. It was about resonating with the other person. Mm. Like, this is a musical thing. Like, there are sympathetic resonances where if you hit a note, like, you know, if you hit a glass, like a crystal glass, and it rings, sometimes some of the other crystal glasses will also start to hum because they end up on the same frequency. Like, that's amazing. And as humans, we have that sympathetic resonance too, like that we will resonate with other people sympathetically, while at the same time, we are still our own person. And it's that going back and forth of being able to feel that sympathy or that empathy, but also being able to have a completely different perspective, that really, like, that's how we do this thing.
That was so beautiful. I love the way you talked about that. And as you're talking about it, I can't stop thinking about when we interviewed Nicholas Bruno from the Somnia Tarot, and the way he shared his personal experience of capturing the image and the experience of the Hanged Man, and how, you know, he had to learn inversion yoga and he's hanging upside down, and, you know, he needed to be in that position for a certain amount of time in order to be able to capture the essence of the card. And eventually he talks about getting to the point where, you know, the blood starts rushing to his head and it becomes too much. And that's when he knows it's time to get down. Mm. And I think talking about the hanged man is perfect way to maybe even wrap up our conversation on empathies, because it's like, yeah, you're able to put yourself in that position, but you also have the responsibility of experiencing, being in touch with yourself enough to experience when it's time to not be in that shared experience anymore, and being able to say, okay, I'm here. I see you. You're not alone. But now I have to flip myself right side up again. Thank you so much for listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok under the handle @TheTarotDiagnosis and join us while we pull daily cards and explore tarot and mental health in between podcast episodes. You can also subscribe to our podcast to make sure that you never miss an episode. If you have a topic or question that you'd like for us to explore on the podcast, you can contact us directly on our website, www.thetarotdiagnosis.com.